flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Welcome back here, folks, here from Media Row. We're in the New Orleans and Company host booth here, and we are sponsored by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So, and we thank both parties for doing so. It's a great location. We're kind of this in the center.
It really is.
Everything going on and folks moving through. A lot of folks here from the media. 6,000?
I think that's what the number I heard. We'll get that confirmed, but it's thousands of members of the media.
Obviously, I think most of the media is probably already plowed in here. Big event for the media tomorrow night put on by New Orleans and Company. And really that's all about exposing folks to the place we call home.
Yeah,
in order to gain exposure.
The host committee ain't dumb.
We're not shy about this.
No, they're
and they know what it is. I mean, they're
going to feed the media. They're going to entertain the media. They're going to wine and dine the media.
Yeah,
because they want them to have the best, most positive experience here in New Orleans possible. So from one corner of the globe to the other, all across the country, every influencer, every radio broadcaster, television broadcaster, social media poster, everybody who has been credentialed for this event just can't help but rave about New Orleans. And that's the truth, when you get down to it, of the extended impact on tourism that we'll see from this Super Bowl.
You know, the only thing that's kind of lacking, it would be kind of cool, is if the general public, if there was like a catwalk around here where they could move around and kind of watch, you know, what's going on. Because you have all of the major television stations,
mm-hmm.
right? You got all the cable stations. You've got Sirius is actually right across from us. You have a lot of other sporting groups and associations that are here broadcasting live.
Well, to tell you the truth, that used to be the case. Last time the Super Bowl was here, and all the other Super Bowls I've ever been in any way associated with, Radio Row and the Broadcast Center was a public attraction. The NFL this year has decided that they want to feature celebrities, feature players, former, current, whatever, as part of the NFL experience, which opens Wednesday just down from us here
right next door at the convention center.
And so what used to happen was Radio Row was where all the celebrities came and the public could see them going on radio shows and on television shows and all of that. But this is a little different this time. So we get exclusive one-on-one access to a lot of these big names, big celebrities who will be showing up, most of them a little later in the week.
Right.
And particularly Wednesday is kind of the day for the huge influx of fans and celebs. But that'll happen as part of the NFL experience. And for adults, that's only $20 to get into the NFL experience.
Yeah.
Kids 12 and under, I think, are free.
Yeah.
So you've got the opening event tonight. Then you have that starting Wednesday and all week. You got the parade on Saturday. And those are just a few of the events. There are so many events, you can't count them anymore. I mean, between all of the bars, all the restaurants, all the venues, all of the makeshift setups we're seeing now, there are concert halls that didn't exist 4 days ago that are now under these massive tents that are set up all around the city. There are stages for live performances and concerts everywhere, and it's really unbelievable.
Now, and that's interesting that you say that's changing. The NFL does a great job of always trying to keep it fresh, right?
Yes.
Something different, a different type of experience. There is a lot of feedback that they solicit from folks as to how things are handled, and they're always improving upon their product.
Yeah, and I think they also wanted to have an opportunity to have a more streamlined process where they could present these celebrities, these current players, these former players, these coaches, these Hall of Famers, and everything else as part of the NFL experience, where they could then directly to the fans say, look who we have brought to you as part of adding value to that experience for the fans that go to the NFL experience.
All right, we're waiting to get our guest, Erin Grayson Sapp, who is with Tulane University, and she authored Moving the Chains, and we'll talk about this event in 1965 that actually happened right here in this city that kind of changed the course of the city in many respects. Why don't we go to a break, and we'll get Erin Grayson Sapp on at that point in time. So we will be right back. Dave Cohen, Newell Norman from Media Row in a New Orleans and Company booth here. We will continue to provide breaking news, breaking coverage of everything that's going on here relative to the Super Bowl when we return. Stay with us. We're here at Media Row. We're at the booth of New Orleans and Company. A little bit of a glitch relative to our guest, Erin Grayson Sapp, and I think we'll work that out.
Yeah, we'll get around in a minute. But the nice thing is, being here at the host committee booth,
yep,
we can call an audible.
Yeah, exactly.
And we did.
That's what we did.
Barry Kern, president of Kern Studios and Mardi Gras World, was walking through, and I said, you saw him, actually, and said, let's get Barry on. Hey, Barry.
How y'all doing today?
We're going to put him on the spot. I know that you're hosting a bunch of these activities, obviously, you know, the parade, all kinds of different things. So tell us from your perspective what you're seeing, this experience, and what y'all are putting on as a company.
Well, I mean, look, obviously, I've been part of these Super Bowls since I'm a kid. You know, if you remember the very first ones before they even called it a Super Bowl,
right,
was literally, it was the championship game. You know, and what ended up happening was is we had parades, you know, for the pregame was a parade and all kind of things. So we've been involved in it. And to see, even since the last time that Super Bowl was here.
In 13.
Oh, my gosh. It's unbelievable how it's just grown. This grows like Mardi Gras. It's insane. It's crazy. It just gets bigger and bigger every time it happens. It's
yeah, that's nuts. Great. So you were a little kid. Your dad's putting on parades and all this stuff for the championship game. And now here you are at this Super Bowl, the record-tying 11th Super Bowl for New Orleans. And you were just name-dropping before you came on the air. So I want you to tell people about some of the amazing things you've got to help put together.
Well, first of all, I want to first thank the Sports Foundation, which is a group that works with New Orleans and Company to bring these events to New Orleans. We understand how important this is, that it keeps this city relevant in the tourism business that we're in. Look, we put on events better than anybody else on earth. It's the reason why we're getting number 11. Hell, we'd be number 12 if Katrina hadn't happened, and we'd be ahead of Miami.
Right.
But we are we are. It's going to happen, absolutely. First of all, the events are great. It's just so much fun. The NFL has embraced New Orleans, and this will be a New Orleans Super Bowl. And normally it's an NFL Super Bowl. Well, it's an NFL Super Bowl and a New Orleans Super Bowl in one. We're going to, from the Lombardi Gras that's going to be on Saturday morning at 10 o'clock with you know, great NFL sponsors, with our local host committee sponsors that'll be this parade with the best bands. We've got LSU band in the front. We got Todd Graves as our king. I mean, it's going to be spectacular.
I like that Lombardi Gras.
Lombardi Gras, absolutely.
Yeah, that's the parade.
sounds good to me, right? And so we got Lombardi.
He's on a roll. Don't interrupt him.
So then we got both. So tomorrow night, and it was really interesting. I remember the last time we had Super Bowl here the year before, where they asked me to be part of the host committee for events, right? Being Chalk Barry, would you deal with the events? Well, I know how to do it. That's the one thing I know how to do. So that's the one thing I can help
damn
out
well
with, right?
Too, yeah.
So they said, Barry, could you help out? They said, but would you come to Indianapolis and see what we do there? And so I went to the media event in Indianapolis, which the people in Indianapolis were really nice.
Oh, they're really nice.
No, they were so nice. And I get to that event, and I'm like, oh, my God, they're, like, drinking warm beer. The food wasn't good, and it's 6,000 media from all over the world. I'm like, these are the guys that are going to write the story about the city. I said, when they come to New Orleans, we're going to make sure that we blow these people out of the water. And, frankly, that's what we did last time. Tomorrow night at Mardi Gras World in the River City is going to be a mixture of Jazz Fest and Mardi Gras meat during Super Bowl. And I'm going to tell you right now, for 6,000 members of the media from all over the world, and they're going to eat some of our best, taste of our best food. We're going to have grilled oysters. We're going to have shrimp ramelot. We're going to have anything that you can think of that they would think of as the best New Orleans food they're going to get to have. And you know what? They're not going to wait more than 1 minute for a drink, because I've built these super bars. They've got 8 bartenders and 8 bar backs. I said, no one waits more than a minute for a drink.
The Super Bowl Super Bar.
I know, but I want these guys
their
to have a great time.
Their interviews Wednesday morning may really suck.
Well, you know, the last time that we did this, they said the only thing they had to complain about was they had nothing to complain about. That was literally, they
said, the drinks were too strong.
Right. No, so I think we're going to blow those guys away. And then Wednesday night, incredible event happening Wednesday night at the new Mardi Gras World Annex, a brand new venue. We're just opening. Literally, there was so much demand this year for events. We opened up a new venue called the Mardi Gras World Annex on Chapultepec Street, where ALS, Team Gleason, National ALS, is holding a fundraiser. They have some big A-listers going to be at that event. Very important. Obviously, Steve Gleason, who we all know and love, and just a very important thing. The NFL has embraced that. So that event's on Wednesday night. Thursday, we get a respite. Well, also, we're going to be St. Louis Cathedral.
Being
lit up Wednesday night. Mrs. Benson has helped us with that. And, you know, that building, probably the most important building that we have in the city or the state, St. Louis Cathedral. That all happens. You also have the Manning event. The Mannings are with LCMC on Wednesday night, which is going to be incredible. Then Thursday, a brief respite. And then Friday night, we got Shaq. Shaq's Funhouse. And, by the way, that's how we were able to get Shaq to be Bacchus this year, which, by the way, I have to lower the throne on the Bacchus King's float.
He'll hit his
so
head
Shaq's
on the
head
line.
Doesn't
so
hit,
hit the oak trees.
The oak trees on St. Charles Avenue. So I've got a whole new throne we're working on for Shaq's King's float, which I'm going to wait until Todd, because Todd Graves is going to be riding that float. We've got the
not
the,
to mention is what 16 or 18 size shoe.
Yeah, exactly. You know, no. And this throne that we built for him is 8 feet tall. Wait till you see it. It's really spectacular. So we got all this fun stuff. So that's so Friday night, Shaq's Funhouse. Saturday, we've got Sports Illustrated, The Party.
Right.
And they have these big DJs like Dom Dola and Diplo. My kids tell me they're big DJs.
Yeah.
I have no idea what the hell they're talking about. But I can tell because everybody, all of a sudden I'm getting texts from everybody I know.
Yeah.
Hey, you got tickets for Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night. And then the big event is Sunday. We've got Guy Fieri's Flavor Town, which they're expecting almost 10,000 people at Mardi Gras World and the River City venues, where they're going to be all these. This food is going to be spread out. It's a huge Flavor Town tailgate. There's going to be free food, and that's the one that's kind of open to the public. I think you go online and you register for tickets. Anyway, really interesting. That's on Sunday morning,
and then that
starts Sunday. I think it's Sunday, maybe at noon, it starts, or maybe earlier. And then, but the parade is going to be the exciting thing. These bands that we've got Saturday morning, 10 a.m., follows the route where we start in the Marigny. Elysian Fields, we line up. We go down Decatur, North Peters, Chapultepec, the Poydras, we take a right. St. Charles Avenue, we take a left. So we've got reviewing stands with the background of St. Louis Cathedral as one spot, Gallier Hall, And then NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune, the Advocate will be the final reviewing stand. And we the parade ends at St. Joseph, where it's followed by a private event for those sponsors at the CAC.
So you don't have anything going on?
Nothing going on. And there may be some wet paint on the floats because we just got the designs last week. So I'm here to tell you that if you see a drip or so.
Flying by the seat of our pants.
This is what we do. Right? Yeah. I mean, literally.
Yeah, and after that, then you actually have Mardi Gras. Yeah.
Well, exactly. Let's not even get into that. I'm already thinking about how to start. Like what happens as soon as these parties are over and we start getting back? Because we're juggling all these
that
things.
That jiggling you're hearing in his pockets are the Advil.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck to you. We know you got a lot going on this week.
Yeah, it's great. Well,
you guys are difference makers for this city in so many different ways and on so many different fronts. And, human nature is a first impression is a lasting impression. It starts here today, right, in
media
center. And then it just builds and it builds and it builds and it builds to the culmination on Sunday. And then even as everyone leaves, you want them to have a great experience leaving the city.
Well, and I really think the best thing that we've got going for us right now, besides the fact that we're going to do everything that we always do, and, we love people in New Orleans. So these people come and they feel hospitality like they don't experience anywhere else in the world. The other thing is the weather.
Yeah, it's supposed
to be spectacular. Yeah. So, I mean, how lucky are we that this wasn't a couple of weeks?
I walked for the office here. Didn't break a sweat.
I know, that's my point.
That's unheard of.
No, but think about it. Think about if it had been just a week ago, it would have been a whole different story.
And it got frightening there because there was one long-range forecast that said we were getting it again this
right.
week.
Right, yeah. It terrified me.
It was absolutely wrong. All right, Barry, we know you got to get back to work.
Thank you.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Kern Studios and Mardi Gras World putting a beautiful face on the Super Bowl week for all of the media, all the visitors, and making sure that people who come here have an amazing time and see what New Orleans really has to offer. We're back after this on WW.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are at the host committee booth on Media Row, a great venue, by the way. We're having a great time just talking to a lot of folks that we've known, for a long, long time.
Yeah, it's hard to do a radio show because they keep coming up and saying hi and shaking hands and fist bumping.
But you can feel the momentum growing for sure. There's a lot about this city that folks don't really know and or recognize in certain events. And our next guest, Aaron Grayson Sapp, who is a Tulane alumni and a New Orleans author, will host Moving the Chains, a discussion on professional football's role in the civil rights movement in New Orleans. And she also authored that book, Moving the Chains, a civil rights protest that saved the Saints and transformed New Orleans. And she joins us. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. I, for one, knew about this happenstance, but if you would, if you'd kind of give our listening audience a little bit of information about what happened in 1965.
Well, in 1965, New Orleans sports promoters were trying to get a team in either the NFL or the AFL, the American Football League. And so they had been bringing in preseason games and, you know, trying to impress the leagues. And they were impressing the leagues with, you know, record-setting attendance at preseason games and things of that nature. So locals felt like they were pretty close to getting a team. And they scored the AFL All-Star game for January 1965, which felt like the sort of final audition. Like, that was going to be their ticket into the pros. Maybe even the two leagues were going to fight over the city after the show they put on in New Orleans hosting the All-Star game. But when the players got to town, they're supposed to be there a week before the game, too, for just a week-long celebration. It was a big deal. And when the players touched down, the black players ran into trouble immediately with things like being denied taxi service or tables at restaurants or entry into nightclubs and things of that nature, which was a shock to them because the promoters really advertised this as a big party. You know, these guys were going to be superstars in New Orleans. And so the black players voted to walk out and not play the game. And every last one of their white teammates joined them. So the game was called off. It was actually moved to Houston. And, you know, it seemed like New Orleans' shot at getting a pro team was just gone at that point.
So what changed then over the next 2 years after that horrible publicity for the city that seemed to not be welcoming to people of color, that seemed to be discriminatory and maybe somewhere you'd never want to bring your team? How did the city and how did others react to get to a point where we did, just a few years later, win a franchise?
Yeah, that's what was so confusing to me when I first started researching this was, you know, I see that within 2 years, the NFL is setting up shop in New Orleans. And I think, how is that possible? But it was quite surprising to me to sort of dig into it and realize that the biggest thing holding New Orleans back from just having incredible civil rights progress was just a sort of general fear of calling for change. Like, no one wanted to be the force behind too much change in New Orleans. You know, New Orleans is all about tradition. And there were a lot of very prominent white New Orleanians who were ready for the end of segregation, but just kind of afraid to be the force that's out there calling for it. So when the players walked out and it seemed that New Orleans had lost any chance at getting into pro football, that gave the city a popular cause to rally behind, a shared reason to openly promote change. Suddenly, conservatism was football obstructionism, right? So it was just a rallying cry for the city. And so change happened really quickly because it wasn't that there was so much widespread aggressive resistance to racial progress. It was just that the city hadn't had that spark, that reason for everyone to rally together.
Yeah. That's kind of wild. That's exactly. Such a horrible event was the catalyst, Newell, for something so amazing that comes so quickly.
It was very interesting because a lot of folks, I think, Aaron, I was doing some research in preparation for the interview of some of the folks that actually stood up. Al Davis, the owner of the Oakland Raiders, facilitated the move to the game. They ended up playing the game in Houston, right?
Right, right. Jefferson Stadium.
Yeah, and you know, it was interesting. I knew of the event because what a lot of people didn't know about my predecessor, Harry Lee, is that at the age of 32, he was the actual head of the Louisiana Restaurant Association.
As a Chinese-American.
As a Chinese-American in 1964. And then when the Civil Rights Act of 1964 passed, he started and helped foster, you know, some movement relative to desegregation of restaurants, and then this happened. And it was a real shock to a lot of the restaurateurs that had kind of decided that they were going to be front and center on desegregation in restaurants. And I don't know if you came across that, Aaron, but I remember vividly the best conversations I had with Harry Lee were actually while we were hunting, playing Trivial Pursuit back at the camp. and we talked about this event and what it meant and how discouraging it was for many leaders in the city that thought, as you so appropriately identified, they thought this was going to be the breakout event for them, right?
Right, yeah. And it's interesting that when the Civil Rights Act passed, a lot of New Orleans was patting itself on the back because there were forward-thinking businessmen in the city that had opened up their doors quite happily and readily and was very peacefully. Things were starting to integrate. One thing I found was particularly in the very touristy, traditional areas of town, like the French Quarter, things were slower to change. And a lot of those places hadn't even really had been tested by civil rights activists or anything. There hadn't been any integration in that part of town yet. So there were plenty of very forward-thinking businessmen who had opened their doors. And so it was shocking to them, too, that to a lot of people, that they thought the New Orleans had handled the Civil Rights Act super peacefully and completely, but there was just so much that just hadn't quite changed yet. And so it was a wake-up call as to just how much still needed to be done.
And then it did come rapidly, though. I think that's kind of the most amazing part of this story is you say that there was definitely lacking in integration. There still was, at least in some parts of the city, a real resistance to integration. But the national and international attention of this AFL championship walkout really did, and the name of the book is great, move the chains, but not only move them really quickly.
It did. It was hard for me to get my head around how quickly it happened. And I think that's when I had to just go back and look at where we were coming from. And there had been so much piecemeal integration taking place. It was that when integration was introduced, locals took it very peacefully. You know, not everyone, of course, but largely. And but it was just that slowness, that fear of introducing too much change too quickly. I think the attitude was that people were ready for it. It was just someone needed to, like you said, a catalyst. Someone needed to light that spark. And it was just so fun to see the city come together and be so excited about pro football that, you know, as I said, you were an obstructionist if you weren't on board trying to show the city's hospitality.
You know, I talked often to broadcasting legend Buddy D about how sports, and particularly the Saints, played such a huge role in making people feel comfortable with each other, because they would come together at a Saints game, black, white, brown, yellow, you name it. Everybody of every race was sitting in those stands cheering for the same team at the same time, and race didn't seem to matter in there. And he really remarked, as he watched that process unfold, how much he felt it made people more comfortable with integration and moving the civil rights agenda forward.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a beautiful story. One anecdote in my book is that, you know, we all know the first regular season play in Saints history when John Gilliam ran back the opening kickoff for a touchdown against the Rams. And I have this great anecdote of Moon Landrieu being at that game and just after that play, sitting in awe of the tens of thousands of black and white New Orleanians, all intermingled, all cheering wildly for a black football player whose home turf was Tulane Stadium. And he thought, it wasn't long ago at all, this would have been unimaginable. And here we are. You know, it's just a beautiful story. And that's what it is for New Orleans. I mean, the team, especially because the city sort of had to prove their unity in order to get the team. When the Saints landed in New Orleans, it was everybody's team. It was part of the New Orleanian identity. And just researching, it was so beautiful to see the city come together for football. And it still is that way.
I was in that stadium, and I remember it to this day. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Now, you're going to be joined. You're going to have an event today, free and open to the public. It'll occur at 4:30. At Tulane University Law School's Wyman Hall, my alma mater. Guests are required to register, but you're going to be joined by Bobby Bell and Ron Mix, two football Hall of Famers.
I know, it's a dream come true. I'm supposed to sort of give a presentation, but I might be too starstruck sitting with those two gold jackets. You know, I don't even know if I'm going to be able to do it.
Well, bring an autographed copy of your book, and yes, then you can ask them for an autograph in return.
We'll bring two.
Oh, there you go.
Or three. Well, no, yeah, yeah. Each book.
No, it's, you know, it's amazing, Aaron, the breadth and depth of the events and what they're covering, both culturally, historically, and the role that the NFL has played in any number of cities. And, you know, it's funny, you learn these things as life goes on, and it's like, you have these aha moments, right?
And one thing Aaron pointed out that I wasn't thinking about was it wasn't only the multicultural group of people in the stands all cheering for the same team, but all the players on the field, on the team together, playing in unison, regardless of race. for one common cause to win a game. And that, you're right, Aaron, I think, showed people right there that we can all work together for a common cause, regardless of our background or race or anything else.
Absolutely. I mean, another anecdote I love is that Ron Mix, who will be joining me, as you said, gave an interview to, I think, the Times-Picayune right before the All-Star game, right before the All-Star game was supposed to happen in New Orleans. And he said at that time, the best thing about being an AFL player, a pro football player, was the camaraderie with his teammates, even in times of misery. And it was just so prophetic that he gave that interview before being the first white player to back up the black players after they voted to leave. I mean, he said, if you guys are leaving, I'm coming with you. And I wanted you to know you have at least one white teammate behind you. But then, of course, all of their white teammates joined too. But it's just, it is beautiful to see, as you say, both the fans and then the way being a part of a team has that same effect. It's really beautiful.
Well, one, congratulations on your book. Congratulations on hosting this event this evening. As I said, it is free to those that want to attend today. It's going to be at 4:30 at Tulane University's Law School. And best of luck to you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. This is great.
Thank you. It was awesome. We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
And Newell, we've talked a lot about the economic impact of the Super Bowl. We talked about the $450 million Caesars alone put into rebranding, completely renovating, and building a whole new hotel. $3 billion in total in private money going into improving our city before the Super Bowl, but also we're finding out there's a whole lot of money going back out to the community.
Absolutely, and joining us is Lisa Alexis, CEO and President of New Orleans Culture and Tourism Fund. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
We know that you're very active with New Orleans and Company and GNO Inc. And,
yes,
and so forth. So tell us from your organization's perspective how this is going.
This is going very well. We're very excited because our organization was one of the ones who went with New Orleans and Company to bring the NFL creative team throughout the city on last year when they were looking at the creative work. And as a result of that tour, they have actually partnered and contracted our local female Mardi Gras Indian to do the NFL logo. So it starts with that opportunity. But with that, I've just been checking with other organizations and private companies. I have right now a tally of about $1.5 million where cultural entities here have been contracted to support in some way for the Super Bowl.
So musicians, artists, dancers, you mentioned Mardi Gras Indians, the list goes on and on. So they want a legitimate, real New Orleans cultural feeling as part of what goes on this week around the Super Bowl.
Yes.
And that's great that means money in the pockets of our local artisans.
Absolutely. It's been great.
You know, there's always a level of skepticism out there. So I love hearing these anecdotal stories about the fact that they are, in fact, hiring local talent. We know it. You've seen it. I've seen it. We know better. But a lot of folks don't realize it. So it's great to hear these stories that they're investing back in the community, and that's part of that economic impact that we've talked about that sometimes doesn't really get accounted for.
Absolutely. And I believe our partnerships and sponsorships throughout the year has seen a $2 billion impact with the festivals and all sorts of cultural programming that takes place. But it's great to see the NFL as well invest in the culture.
Well, you, as you, with your role with the New Orleans Cultural and Tourism Fund, this has also have to be a boom for you in terms of getting more money to help support that tourism that comes from culture in our city.
Absolutely. We received the hotel tax dollars, and with that, we invested directly back in. So all of the people are in our hotels. We hope the hotels are sold out and would be sold out for at least 2 weeks or more because then those funds go right back into the culture.
I saw somewhere, Newell, that hotels right now are going for $4,000 a night with a three-night minimum.
I've seen that as well.
And that's so that means that's more money for you
that's
because
awesome.
The more they can get for those rooms, you get what, 1% of it goes into the fund.
We get 50 cents on every dollar for
you get
the
50 cents.
Occupancy tax.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge driver for the Dome as well and for other entities that receive money from the hotel motel tax.
Absolutely.
And, you know, those are numbers that are easily quantifiable, right? But, again, that all drives the economic impact and the more nights that we can do this for. So these events that they're having like tonight mm-hmm. and others to draw people to the city earlier in advance of the game, the better.
Yeah, and you think about everybody it impacts. It's a tuba player in a second line. It's a seamstress who's making a Mardi Gras Indian outfit. It's the people who are washing the linens that are used
yes.
on the tables and yeah. all of these things. And all of that money that's coming in means more money for them, and then they're spending more money. So
yes.
all of the local bars, all the local restaurants, all of the local businesses, the grocery stores, they're all making more money.
And it puts us on a global stage because with an NFL Super Bowl parade, now people will see our culture live, you know, beyond Mardi Gras, as well as I know that we have cultural artists booked as part of the pregame show for the Super Bowl and other places as well. So it's really exciting that the media will be able to take it in and give us greater exposure.
Yeah, and even when they go to commercial breaks during the Super Bowl, they show the culture.
Yes.
And to see a drone shot or an above shot of the parade going to a commercial break or a Mardi Gras Indian or a second line jazz band or a brass band or whatever it is, that's got to make people want to taste, feel, and come experience New Orleans.
Absolutely.
And you get to see it from a different perspective. You know, it's been a while since the Super Bowl's been here. And
right.
Was 2013
yeah, was the last
ago,
one, yeah.
Right? You know, and you think about that, it's a little different than just, you know, John Q. Citizen out there. You get to see a lot of behind the scenes what's going on. I mean, you and I were just talking about this place.
Yes.
I mean, this is like a Very city nice. inside of a city.
And, exactly.
You know, so it's really, really interesting and a lot of fun. Lisa Alexis, thank you so much for joining us, CEO and President of New Orleans Culture and Tourism Fund. Keep up the great work, and have a great week.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us.
Don't have too much fun.
Yeah.
You know, that's the one thing we keep hearing from a lot of people. They're going to love this week,
yeah.
but they'll also be very happy when the game is over and everybody's going home because they'll be able to catch their breath and catch up on sleep and enjoy the fact that they get just a couple of days before we go right back into it with Mardi Gras.
I want to see the media people on Wednesday morning.
From that Tuesday night party. Right next door, Mardi Gras World. Yeah,
that's going to be interesting.
Turn on the morning shows all over the country and see the bags under the eyes of the TV journalists and hear the voices of people struggling. What we got coming up next hour? No?
All right, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we will visit with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust, and we'll talk about tariffs. For one thing, a lot of uncertainty about that, and I understand that this morning President Trump put a pause on the Mexico tariffs for some reason. We'll try.
So, what's going on with the Canadian tariffs then?
We'll get to the bottom of that when we come back, right here at Media Row in the Convention Center.